Very good, and welcome to the last meditation class of the year. So, usually I announce that the beginner's class is to the room on my right. But now there's no beginner's class. After one whole year of meditation, everyone is expected to be experts. So, but anyway, for those people who have come for the first time, bad luck. You're going to have to sit down here anyway. So what we usually do, anyone here for the first time, expecting just short meditations, we usually give a little introduction. After the introduction, we do about 45-minute guided meditation, mostly guided, but much of it is by yourself. So if you are here for the first time, maybe not the first couple of times, and you feel a bit stiff, you know, when you are after 10, 15, 20 minutes, then all you need to do is just open your eyes, just maybe stretch your legs. I mean, don't go up and walk, but just stretch things a little bit as quietly as you possibly can. And then just after 5 minutes, just close your eyes and carry on for another period of meditation. So that's something you can do if you know that the 45 minutes feels a bit long for you. But don't worry, because you know, people usually watch movies for over an hour, or football matches, or cricket matches all day. So, you know, 45 minutes shouldn't be that long for you. So, we're going to be meditating here for about that time. But to begin the meditation, we usually, you know, talk about some of the ways which we can meditate. I know that sometimes if people do make a sound or a disturbance, you know sometimes we get distracted by those sounds or disturbances. It could be that there's a siren of an ambulance just down the Morley Drive. There could be an aircraft going over above us. There could be a North Korean missile on its way to Fremantle. I'm not sure what noises happen in this current age, but nevertheless, the way we deal with this disturbances is understanding what I call the simile of the screen. So you can imagine a screen. And when you watch the screen, you usually watch the middle of the screen, and everything on the edges and beyond the edges tends to disappear. And of course, that's very clear to me because I've just been traveling again, even yesterday, just coming back from Penang and Singapore. And you have to watch these in-flight safety announcements, whatever it is, even though you've seen it many times before. They say that because every aircraft is different. I haven't seen them different, pretty much the same. But anyway, I do what I'm told. I'm a good monk, behave, get set a good example. So there you are, you're watching the screen. And when you watch the screen, is you tend to, I notice this, that you actually, your mind actually goes inside the screen. And the upholstery of the chair in front of you, then the little plastic border of the screen, all vanishes. You actually zoom in. And what's on the edges, you just are not aware of. And that idea of zooming in is how to deal with distractions. So what happens is you may be just watching your body or watching your breath, say, in the meditation, and then there's a noise. Don't bring that noise into the center of your screen, in the sense that, well, this is really important. Who did that? I have to do something about that in the future. Don't make it important, because if it's important, it comes right to the center of your screen. And the breath falls off. So if you keep the center of your screen, now this is the metaphor of your what you're aware of, keep the center with the breathing, say, or in loving kindness meditation, or watching your pulsometer, whatever it happens to be. What your main object is, keep in the center. So you can hear the sound, but it's over here somewhere, to your right, to your left. Never in the center. Because if you center it, it's the most important thing. It means the disturbance is what occupies your mind, and the other things, like the breath, just falls off the screen and disappears as you're focused and just consumed with the problem. So instead, always keep the center, you know, in the screen of vision on, say, the breath. And then you will be able to hear other things. You will be able to feel an itch on your knee or an ache or something. But it's not central. It's not the big problem. The breath is here and that's on the edge somewhere. So if you keep everything other than your main meditation object on the edge of your screen. You don't need to forcefully get rid of it. Just make sure it doesn't come to the center. Then you'll find that it just vanishes by itself. It falls off the screen as you naturally just focus in on something. And that idea of like focusing in on something, going in, is the main part of what meditation is. We focus in, keep the center, you know, on the right thing, and then you go deeper and deeper in, you fall in, and all the other things on the edge of the screen tend to disappear. And that is the basis for that simile on meditation, which I've often given, but mostly during retreats, of the thousand petal lotus. And that simile is that the lotus is closed up at night time, and when it's closed up at night time, the outermost sheath of the lotus is very, very rough and dirty and not fragrant, not beautiful. But when the warmth and light of the sun strike the outermost sheath of the lotus in the early morning, the warmth and the light open up the outermost sheath, so that the next layer of petals can also receive the warmth and light of the sun, so they can open up. So the next layer of petals can receive the warmth of the light of the sun, so it opens up. So the petals open up one after the other. One opens up, allows the light and warmth of the sun to hit that inner level of petals, so they can open up. That's how the lotus opens up. That simile is that you are that lotus. And the light of the sun stands for the mindfulness, and the warmth stands for the kindness. With the mindfulness and the kindness hitting this body and mind, you open up. So what that actually means in practice, you're sitting here, you're aware of your old body aching, itchy, not as comfortable as it could perfectly be, but it's good enough. So you're just kind, aware of your body, it relaxes, it gets easy, and you go inside towards the emotional world, the mind. And when you first go into that world, there's lots of disturbance, especially carrying the past and the future around. And then you don't try and get rid of the past or try and obliterate the future. All you do is just to stay in this present moment. You just go in with the warmth and light of the sun and mindfulness and the kindness, and soon you go into the center of time, which is the present moment. And you're in the present moment, shining the warmth mindfulness and kindness onto this present moment, and soon the present moment becomes quite okay, quite satisfying, quite full of contentment. And when you have that contentment, you find you don't need to give a commentary, you don't need to say anything. So you go into the silence of the present moment. You just keep going in. And in the silence, you usually find your breath, whether you look for it or not, it just usually comes up. When you're aware of the breath, soon you keep going in, into the breath, you have the full awareness of the breath, from the beginning of the in-breath to the end of the in-breath, beginning of the out-breath to the end of the out-breath. You just keep going into that, and soon it becomes so delightful, so happy, you go deeper into your lotus, the delightful, beautiful breath, and then you just keep watching that delightful, beautiful breath, having a wonderful time, and soon you feel lights in the mind, these beautiful nimittas, you're just going deeper in. And then what do you do next when you get these beautiful lights in the mind? You're just mindful and kind. You don't do anything. You just go into them. And after a while, you go into these beautiful, amazing sort of experiences of the nimittas. And then what do? You keep going in, all the way to the center of your lotus. And that's where you find the jhanas and all this amazing stuff. And there is a whole journey from basic meditation to the deepest of stages. So easy. And some people say, oh, I can't do that. What are you talking about, you can't do that? Just don't go thinking about it, don't go doubting, don't go putting yourself down. All you need to do is just be aware and kind. Can you be mindful? Can you be kind? Then you can do it. So, off we go into the journey of inner space. I gave this, just years ago, I went to Adelaide, and this radio producer, he just asked me, he came to my retreat, it's only a weekend retreat, and just recorded everything I said, and he used it in a radio program, Adelaide Radio's Inner Space, with opening your chakra music, and it was like always done late at night. People said it was mostly music to smoke marijuana by, that sort of program. But anyway, I don't know. But anyway, I just gave a few of these little sayings on it. But anyway, I did do that inner space and going inner and inner and inner and inner. See what's right in the center of you right now. Just be mindful and be kind and explore inner space. Are you ready to take off? 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. Okay, let's get going. So, if you want to get yourself ready in your nice meditation posture, as best you think you can. And close your eyes. One of the reasons we close our eyes is because we get less distractions. More of our brain capabilities is made available just for feeling and for hearing. We're not so concerned with smelling and tasting. Sight is so easy to turn off. Close the lids of the eyes and soon you're not seeing anything. So as you focus on my voice and then also on your bodily feelings, first of all check your legs. I know people say I keep doing this over and over, but it's important. It's good guided meditation to make sure that you enter the meditation slowly, methodically, with some body awareness. In this case, feeling any sensations in the lower part of your body. And it's not just knowing. It's also doing something about it, caring for that part of the body, which means, if necessary, move, adjust. And adjusting your legs until they're the most comfortable position you can find. Whenever you move those legs mindfully, the awareness allows you to get feedback, to see if having moved them, they're more comfortable. If they're not, then go back to the first position. A bit of trial and error, always being mindful, soon gets you into the best posture as you feel it. Not following guidebooks or experts, but following your own mindfulness. What do you need? Once your legs are well adjusted, then you move up to your bottom, your butt. fidget if necessary. You've got to sit like this for 45 minutes. You must make yourself comfortable to begin with. Don't be heedless. Be aware and kind. And once you've fidgeted enough and you found the best position for your bottom, then go up to your back. So move and adjust that until it becomes as comfortable as you can make it. And remember, it's a type of comfort that you can maintain for 40 minutes. Not just momentary comfort, but just a comfort which is strong, long-lasting and stable. Once the back is comfortable, then check the hands. Are you aware of that part of the body? The awareness allows you feedback as you move it this way and move it that way to find the most comfortable position. A lot of you do that automatically. But now I'm pointing out that the mindfulness and the kindness is what produces the most comfortable position. It allows you to relax. Later on, we'll use that to really get deep into our meditation. Feedback and the kindness. Then up to your shoulders, to relax the shoulders. Huge bundles of muscles which are being pulled both directions. Stretched under strain. And now we imagine letting go of both ends. There's some muscles in the back, relax. Up to the neck, making sure that's relaxed. Just to put attention there, give some kindness, and you find that the muscles tend to relax by themselves. And you can feel those muscles relaxing. The awareness focus on that part of your body gives you incredible insights in how to relax. What causes a lot of the pain, not all of it, but much of it, the way we respond, the way that we can overreact to an itch in the throat. The mind does have power, we're sending it to our neck and throat, mindful and kind. Being aware of our face, especially the muscles around the eyes, to loosen them. The mindfulness allows you to feel them relax. So there's no tension on the face. There you are, sitting, be aware of the whole body, relax the knees. And enjoy what I was called the delight of bodily relaxation. When it comes, when it's there, enjoy it. It takes you into a deeper state of bodily relaxation. It's another important insight to know that when you focus on the beautiful pleasures of the body and the mind, not the sensual ones, but the relaxing ones, you go deeper. Some pleasures are a vehicle to go deeper into meditation. And the delight of a relaxed body is one of those. It takes you into deep and deeper relaxation. Then we move to our mind, our emotional world. Be aware of how peaceful you are or how agitated. The old peaceometer. And keep that in the center of your screen. Anything else on the edges. How peaceful are you? How agitated? And then see what causes the peace to increase. And see what makes more disturbance, the way we react, or the way we're kind. If you put your awareness on that peaceometer, you learn wonderful things. What makes you agitated? What makes the mind become so calm and still and peaceful? You're learning a skill by using the feedback coming from mindfulness. You do find that when you let go of the past and you realize that now is where your future is being made. So you're concerned about the future by being in the present. The only place you can do anything for your future. In the center of time, you'll find the present moment. All you ever do is be aware and be kind. Any disturbances Don't bring them in the center to your field of inner vision. Keep them on the edge. You know them, but you don't center on them. I'll now be quiet to the end of the meditation. Just coming close to the end of the meditation now. It's time to see what's happened to the body and mind. How relaxed is your body? How peaceful is the mind? We need to learn how to relax and find peace in our lives. This is the most efficient way to do it. I'm having the gong 3 times. And you hear the gong sounding for the 3rd time. You may open your eyes to end meditation. Questions from overseas, but first, are there any questions from here? Actually, usually I like to do the questions from overseas first because it gives the time for people to get their brain working again. Then first one, what do you do when your meditation isn't going forward anymore? And even can't hold a good meditation posture anymore. Thank you so much. That's wonderful. You're not going forward anymore, you're actually staying still. And you can't hold a good meditation, you let it go, and it holds itself. So whenever there's any difficulties, problems, or you feel you're not getting anywhere in the meditation, just pause and ask a question which is so relevant, what is it I want? And if you find out what you want, what you're expecting, what you're trying to achieve, you find that is the problem. And when you don't want anything, you'll enjoy what you already have. You get this beautiful sense of contentment, just this is good enough for me. And from there, we get the kindness, opening the door of your heart to this moment, and you go very deep. So, if your meditation isn't going forward anymore, it means you want to take it forward. You have some goals, aspirations, they kill you. So, check again, 2 types of meditation. This is, you know, for those who know a bit about basic Buddhism, about the 4 Noble Truths, is what I keep saying is 2nd Noble Truth, meditation. 2nd Noble Truth, core Buddhist teachings. When you crave, it causes you suffering. When you want something, it's always going to cause you tension. So to be able to relax, if you want something, it's going to go in the opposite direction to what meditation should be doing. So you want something there, the first question there. You're trying to get somewhere. So see if you can just learn how to let go. Ajahn Chah kept on saying this to me, we meditate not to gain things, but to let things go. He put his hand up and wave it up and down. This is a leaf on a tree, it only moves because of the wind. If the wind stops, the leaf would stop also, eventually. And the leaf represented your mind, and the wind represented wanting something, trying to make progress, trying to get somewhere. So when you let go, when the winds of wanting don't blow around your body or mind anymore, the body becomes relaxed and the mind becomes still. So, because you want your meditation to go somewhere, that's why you can't hold a good meditation posture. Just any posture will do. And also from the United States, what do you suggest to help someone to alleviate the feeling of being fearful that things would go wrong, no matter how hard one tries to distract oneself with positive thinking? Again, don't try and distract oneself. Don't try hard, because that causes negativity. The old story, the monster in the emperor's palace get out of here, you don't belong, and just fed the monster, made it bigger and more ugly. And you can get that story online, it's said it so many times, the monster in the Empress's palace. And so that is when you feed, sort of in this particular case, a fear with negativity. It's dead. You know, it's, you say to the fear, your fearful things go wrong, yeah, great. The door of my heart's open to things going wrong. There's a person who, when I got this one from Penang, they went for a job interview, and they qualified for most things, but they said, you know, well, you know, are you a responsible person? And he replied, oh, I'm very responsible. You can check up on all my previous jobs, my previous employers. When anything went wrong, I was always the one responsible. I'm a very responsible person. So when you are afraid of things go wrong, actually more than go wrong. So you don't try to distract yourself with positive thinking. Distraction is the wrong thing. It's just to look at whatever you're doing just in a slightly different way. You don't try and distract yourself and put hands and blindfolds over you. Just get your head and turn it around another way to see the other side of things. That's what I always said, that if ever I really ran out of jokes, if ever I just couldn't teach anymore, yeah, now I can have a relaxation, restful time. I don't have to come to Nolomar anymore. I don't have to travel overseas. Yay! Whatever happens, it's always fine. It's not what happens in life, but how you react to it. How you open the door of your heart to whatever's going to happen. So it's not positive thinking, it's wise thinking from the United States. What path should one take if they're fairly new to Buddhism and interested in monkhood? When is one ready to be a monk? Okay, the first qualification to become a monk, you have to be a man, otherwise become a nun. And as long as you're breathing, then you can become a monk. And I would just do it, for goodness sake. One of the nice things about being a monk or being a nun, because I was just talking earlier about the problems with, you know, other religions being celibate and getting into all sorts of problems because of that vow of celibacy for life. The nice thing about being a monk, you can just become a monk for a short period of time, test it out, and then you can just leave later on, find out if it's really, what is it called, like work experience. That's what we call work experience. Or internship. The other word for being an intern is called anagarika. It's like, you know, some people call it being a slave, but it's not really a slave. Wearing white. But all it really is just, you know, testing out. Why not? Give it a try. So, if you're fairly new to Buddhism, you know, find out what you're doing first of all. So, just experience it and see what's right for you. But look, cool. There's, I don't mind telling this story, I'm sure he won't mind, that there was this young English man, it's not me, it's another English man, there's more than one monk who's born in that country. But anyway, he was an English man, he just finished his university, his degree in psychology, and, you know, he knew someone who knew someone who knew someone who was exporting horses to Singapore for horse racing. And according to the law, the rules, they had to go in an aircraft. And I know they can export elephants, and that's why they're called jumbo jets, but I don't know about horses. People said if they can take a kangaroo back with them to Hong Kong, I said, ask what airline you're flying, and they said, I think it was, I forget what, but it wasn't Qantas. Because Qantas, you can take a kangaroo with you in baggage, called flying kangaroo. So anyway, okay, come on, have a laugh. but anyway, he got a job, basically a free ticket, one-way free ticket to Singapore as a, what's it called, the people look after horses, the grooms. So anyway, so he got a chance to get a free ticket, and the idea was, you know, year after university, not a gap year, but just to travel before he gets a proper job. So off he went, and landed in Singapore, and then just was working his way back over to Europe. He got as far as Bangkok, and when he was in Bangkok, you know, he didn't know anything about Buddhism, but, you know, obviously he saw the culture there, and he met a couple of a doctor and his wife, who was a nurse, and they were working in a refugee camp, you know, with the displaced citizens of Laos and Cambodia, mostly Laotians, up in Ubon, where Ajahn Chah's monastery was. So anyway, they said, do you want to come out and have a look? I said, yeah, sure. It's not the sort of place you go for tourists, because there's nothing there. It's quite boring. Flat land. And so they went up there, and staying in Ubon, and they just said, well, you know, there's only other Westerners, you know, within 100 miles you can talk with. There's these monks. Do you want to go and have a chat with them? He said, oh, yeah. So off he went, you know, just to have a chat with the Western monks over in Wat Nanachat, and he didn't know anything about Buddhism, but he asked to stay the night. And the following morning, he appeared with his head shaved, asking to become a monk. And that was just really amazing, just what the heck's going on there? You know, he didn't know anything about Buddhism, he just fell into monkhood. And, you know, he is now the abbot of Amawati, that's Ajahn Amaro. And that's his story. Just, that's weird. You know, he didn't plan to be a monk. He just, you know, got there and just, you know, first time he sort of saw the place, I don't know what happened overnight, but the next morning he shaved his own hair and just done being a monk. And that was also really strange because, you know, I was his mentor for a while. And as soon as I got his name, his surname was Horner, H-O-R-N-E-R. And actually, it was the old, he'd got family, goes back for generations, little Jack Horner sat in the corner eating, that was his family. Basically, they just pinched a big plot of land from the Abbot of Glastonbury and just was in their family ever since. But anyway, it's just really strange that anyone who is a scholar, Buddhist scholar, the first translations, especially of the Vinaya and many other Buddhist texts, were done by a Professor Irene Horner at Newnham College in Cambridge. And as soon as he sort of gave me his name for the ordination details, and I asked him, so were you any relation to this Irene Horner? He said, no, I never heard of her. And then what happened later on, we found out that was his auntie. And his father had just cut off his sister, because she was weird. She was just in a Cambridge college studying sort of Southeast Asian or Indian languages. And very finally they met, just before the auntie passed away. It's a really nice little story. And there was a case of somebody, you know, new to Buddhism. Yeah, he's new to Buddhism. He wasn't interested in monkhood until he got there. And just, when is one ready to become a monk? The next day. So sometimes you just can't tell. So anyway, see what happens. Anyway, any questions from the floor? Anyone want to become a monk? A nun? Some of you already got your hair shaved, so you're already ahead of the game. Almost there. No, one problem is, it's always the case, I don't mind saying this, because we're always long waiting list of people wanting to become monks and nuns, simply because there's no space. And all the monks that we're building monasteries, all the nuns building monasteries as well, building kutis. So if you look at the website, you see they've got a little appeal on there to try and raise some funds so that they can build some more kutis at Dharamsala. So it's a nice thing to be able to do if you want to sort of give a donation to the nuns building program. And then afterwards, you know, you'll have a place to donate your wife. Where is a place to donate? I said that over in Penang, so we're building more huts in Bodhinyan. I said, well, you know, once you've got a place, then you can donate your husband. I said, oh, yes, good idea. How much do you need? Anyway, there's somebody joking. So anyway, any questions before? It should be about meditation rather than anything else. Okay, for those who don't know, that tomorrow is Sunday, it's New Year's Eve. So there is no Sutta class tomorrow afternoon, because it's the fifth Sunday of the month. But there is in the evening, from 9 to just past midnight, we have Ajahn Brahm's party. And Ajahn Brahm's party has just started because many people who have come here, they want to do something for the new year. And if they didn't have any other invitation, what happened is that they kept on getting twisted their arms to come to their office parties or someone else's parties where they, you know, they almost got forced to take a drink or do stupid things. So just for those people who want a nice, quiet, but meaningful and kind Buddhist celebration of the new year, 9 o'clock, I think people bring food, bring a plate, bring some munchies or something. And we do have free drinks. You can BYO, as long as it's orange juice, apple juice, no plonk or anything like that. But when you, if you do bring anything alcoholic, I'll do the old turning the whiskey into water trick. So it's it's the opposite of what Jesus did. So it's much more Buddhist, you know. But anyhow, that we have a nice little bit of fellowship and just about. Maybe if you want to come and meditate in here, you can just for a couple of hours. But at the very least, the last half an hour, probably the last 45 minutes, we do a meditation in here. A bit of loving kindness towards the end. And at midnight, that's when we do the gifts and blessing chant for you all. So you can bring in the new year in a very happy way here in this hall tomorrow evening, starting at, we actually start using the community hall just about about 9 p.m. So that's just to keep people on the straight and narrow. It's actually the straight and wide. Keep people sort of out of mischief so you can start 2018 in a very beautiful, wonderful, happy, peaceful, inspiring way. Nice thing to do. So, okay, so let's pay respects to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, and then you can go and do what you need to do.